I never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to another Skin On Podcast. This is number 20.
Ooh.
Yes. Yeah, next week is the big 21. You know, we have a little party.
We're allowed to drive the car.
Yeah.
Meet women.
We're allowed to drink in America. Yeah. That's what's important.
We say this while sipping beers.
Yes.
Yeah, but we're not in America.
Not yet.
Thank the great good Lord.
Anywho, I'm Niall Murphy. I'm joined by Jason Kyle and Philip Bagnall.
Hello. Hi.
This is the Skin On Podcast.
Is it?
The Skin On Podcast.
The only one.
Yes.
Except no imitators.
Yes. Except no pretend Skin On Podcasts.
We're not saying there is one out there. Just
breakaway podcasts or whatever.
Yes, the people.
I'm on the verge, Jay. I'm on the cusp.
We represent the people's front of Skin On, not the Skin On people's front. Splitters.
Besides quality entertainment, what has the Skin On podcast ever done for us?
Oh, good Lord! Yeah, we could go on and on.
Yeah,
and no doubt we will later on. Moving on.
So, what have you, gentlemen, been watching this week?
Well, yesterday I went to see something that I did not have much expectations for, and came out pleasantly surprised. It was Joe, David Gordon Green's film. Nice. I thought this was going to be something in a similar vein to Mud, which I thought was okay.
Or the biography of Joe Maxey.
Joe Maxey?
Yeah.
He doesn't get that.
Oh, God.
Remind me.
He's too young.
I don't.
It's not often I get called too young. I appreciate that. Thanks, fellas. But no, it's Nicolas Cage in his best leading role in at least 5 years, since Bad Lieutenant, at least. In fact, I think he might be better here, because it's a rare performance of restraint from Cage. And it's a reminder of what he can do with a good, a well-written, taught script.
And no CGI bees.
Not the bees! He's excellent. Ty Sheridan from Take Shelter. No, not Take Shelter. Tree of Life and Mud as well.
Iron Man.
What?
Iron Man Tree.
Is he?
Yep.
Was he?
No, that's Simpkin. That's Ty Simpkin, sir.
Oh, now we're getting our ties confused. I have a nice collection of ties.
I'm not surprised by that, in the slightest.
They look good. I have all the nice shirts as well they can go with, and all such wonderful, lovely things. The point is,
Woody Allen here.
We've digressed.
Yes, Joe is excellent. Surprisingly good.
Okay. I do want to see it.
I think you should.
I think you should too.
I should put it on the list of films that I haven't seen yet. And
that's a growing
hopefully
list.
Hopefully get to them all. Yeah, it is a growing list.
So what have you seen then?
I have seen Lock, finally.
Finally? What do you think?
I really, really like it.
Thank you.
And it was one of the first 5-10 minutes when you get into the whole bit. I felt, oh god, this could be shaky, because it's a gimmick. I mean, it's phone booth in a car, but except not crap.
Car phone booth.
Yeah, car phone booth. But it's excellent. Hardy is great
and
easily carries the film. And what I really liked about it, and what it did very well, and you're talking about next stage, the restraint in both the script, because it doesn't go for the big scenes in any real way.
No.
It's all, and it's built up and it earns every little bit of emotion that's there. And also in terms of even the end of it, where they could have had that moment, big moment, but they went the other way. And it was smart and well thought out, full attention throughout the middle of it. That whole, you have another call coming, big takes on it, sense of absolute dread
it
almost
does.
It. And it's just so
wonderful.
Well put together and really lovely film.
A lot of kudos to writer director Stephen Nice on that one. A fantastic job in both roles,
and it was surprisingly, and it kept going throughout, like it didn't lag.
You were riveted all the way through.
Yeah,
admittedly the film isn't 90 minutes long, but
I mean it's as long as it needs to be.
Have you
no more, no less.
Have you ever cared more about concrete in your life?
Never.
But
I never will.
The thing about when I mentioned restraint, even like an industry like that, if you feel that's being researched properly and it's about everything, you're hearing real stuff here, and it adds to it. Like there's a real life here and there's real lives as part of it, and there's some great funny moments in it. There's a lot of drama, but really, really good.
Yeah,
it's got Andrew Scott.
Yes, he was hilarious.
He was hilarious.
Never have a beer and run, really, is it? It's the lesson, really. But he's very good. And all the people on the other end of the call feel like people, crucially, as opposed to script lines, which is a huge, huge thing, because it makes it feel like there's a big drama going on out here when you're in the intimate area of a car.
Mm.
Very, very interesting. Very, very good.
During the filming of this, he did it four nights in a row, four times straight.
Did he?
Through, from start to finish. Wow. And they rang the hotel to where the other people were.
They placed the call to him.
Yeah, during the... Well, or vice versa.
Yeah.
They did it during the course of the movie. They rang, or he rang to the hotel, or they rang him. And, yeah, he did it four times. So he knew the entire script of...
Jesus, I mean, we've known Hardy's a very good actor for quite a bit of time now, but to see him carry something like this, and it's pretty much all on him.
Yeah.
Like, he's virtually every frame of everything, and he's excellent, and the film is really, really good.
And
yeah, it'll make my top 20 of the year, I would imagine.
Excellent.
And it looks amazing.
Yeah,
it does.
The nighttime cinematography is terrific.
Mm.
Oh, big fan.
I concur. My review is on the website, by the way.
Which I have to read, actually, because I'm not sure if I read it when it came out, but now I want to read it after seeing it.
I like that. I appreciate that. Please do. And everybody else, do
I'm
the
not
same.
Really going to read it.
Hey.
Of course.
Until he does the two follow-up, Stock and Smoking Barrel.
No, you didn't. Yeah. Go home. You're drunk.
Oh, bless.
Oh, God.
I spent most of the weekend watching Guardians of the Galaxy, so we will...
Wait, hang on, most of the weekend? Are you, like, watching it on a loop? Did you watch it at least a dozen times?
No, we'll get to that. I watched it a few times. We will get to that.
Yes, I'm sure we will.
Well, yesterday I spent yesterday morning watching Transcendence.
Oh.
Yeah.
Did you achieve Transcendence?
No, I achieved boredom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
I haven't seen it. I probably won't see it.
I'd like to see it just to see if it is as bad as
it. That was it. That was my sole reason for watching it. And because Wally Pfister is a great cinematographer.
He is.
So
I presume it looked pretty, at least.
Yes. It did. But it is utter nonsense of the highest order. The plot is it's just so bad. Oh, well.
I've said it before, but now it's conclusive that Johnny Depp is... Your time is up. Your star power has... I think it has just evaporated.
I wouldn't open a packet of crisps with him.
Boom.
Take that, Jenny.
You just gave yourself a badum tish there.
I did, yeah.
So last week we closed with me having a rant at the IFCO thing about the misreporting of IFCO classification, certification, and censorship. All right. This week we're opening with a rant by me.
Go on.
Just the new Nile.
Yes. These things just annoy the crap out of me. So,
good God, it's Peter Finch reborn.
A number of gossipy websites and different websites around Ireland, but none of the mainstream papers or none of the proper movie websites to report this, but because Transformers has now passed $1 billion in the global box office and has become the 14th highest grossing movie of all time, they're reporting that Jack Rayner is now the first Irish star to pass $1 billion.
Yes. Incorrect.
Yes, which
we
is,
had a bit of a conversation with this on Twitter.
Yeah, which is,
yes, we did.
Which is totally incorrect. It is a complete inaccuracy because that was Liam Neeson in Star Wars Episodes 1. The Phantom Menace was released in 1999. When they re-released it, it passed $1 billion. It's sitting at $1,067,000,000. So he was the first one to do it. And then we also had Cillian Murphy in Dark Knight Rises, and we've also had then if you go into smaller supporting characters,
like
we had Jason Barry in Titanic as well. So it's not true.
It's lazy journalism, isn't it?
It's extremely lazy.
But it's not. This is not new.
It's rabble rousing.
It's going to happen more and more. If you feel ranty every time you see these kind of stories happening, you're going to be ranting a lot more.
Yeah, they just annoy me.
I know.
It's inaccurate.
But I'm with you on this. And it's a bugbear of mine that as soon as anybody from around these parts suddenly achieves any kind of success, it's automatically touted, "Woo, weren't we great? Wonderful! Go us!
Yeah.
No, go him. Well done, Jack Rayner. You got a project that has done stupendous business in spite of a lack of quality control." But,
For profile terms,
it's invaluable.
I mean, he couldn't have done better. Fair play to him. I don't think anybody would argue that point.
No, and we wouldn't deny him his success.
He's in the new Macbeth with Michael Fassbender, American Cathy Art. I mean, the guy is choosing his films well. After Transformers, yes. But in every aspect, he knows what he's doing. He knows a profile, who to work with.
You have to do some schlock in order to get in the door.
And he seems very smart about it. And more power to him.
Colin Farrell worked with Joel Schumacher. It just so happened that they were good Joel Schumacher movies. But who could have told?
Even though Jay just berated one of them a few minutes ago. But I digress.
Colin Farrell's very good in phone booth.
He really is.
And that script hung around for a long time because people got attached to it. And then back then when they realised they had to carry the whole goddamn thing.
But he did it
very well. It just, the whole thing is pants and goes to pieces and Kiefer Sutherland literally phones it in a very awful way.
The ending is silly. Yeah. I hate the end. But other than that, I think it's efficient.
I have a technical problem though. That sound of the phone not being the sound of a phone call. It sounds like it's a loudspeaker somewhere. You know, it doesn't sound right. He's actually on a phone. It should sound like a phone.
But anyway, I think we're getting into a little too much detail. Anyway.
It annoyed me at the time. It obviously hasn't gone away in a decade or so.
The point is, done, Jack Rayner, and to the press who reported him as being the first Irish star to star in 1 billion. Do your research.
Please,
for
goodness
sake.
I mean, for God's sake, we're sitting here with notes in front of us. At least do that.
They even cited in the article that Liam Neeson had almost done it with Star Wars Episode 1 because it was sitting at 965 million.
According to
Box Office Mojo. If you went to Box Office Mojo, you would
find that
see.
Out. I found that out in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
They put in top 20 films of all time. Pop up Wikipedia, it's there.
Yeah. And we just gave you three examples. Yeah. For God's sake. Yeah.
Anywho, on to news, better news from the local front. Calvary has opened in the US and it has opened really well. 18,000 per location, opened in 4 locations, 72,000 in total. But that's the second highest opening of the week behind Guardians of the Galaxy in the US in terms of per screen average. And it is it's similar to what The Guard did, and The Guard went on to make over 5 million at the
US. So they'll expand it. They do it smart, and it is expanding when I was reading.
Yep.
Even if it does minor business at the US box office, it probably more than matches or doubles what it's done already anywhere.
Yep.
So, I mean, if they carefully plan that release...
Oh, yeah, three or four weeks of the US market, it'll equal what it made here. So.
Bravo, Brandon.
Yeah. So it's
getting some fine reviews as well. I mean...
We've already stated that we know how we went at Sundance, and then that prompted Fox Searchlight to spend $2.5 million on it. And so they'll need to make 5 to get, or at least 4 to get back that plus marketing and distribution.
I think it might do it. I mean, it should do.
Although, mind you, I was going through some of the reviews and they like it, but there aren't as many of the masterpiece raves that we had over in this side.
A lot of it was heavily focused on Gleason's performance.
Which is fair enough because he's
brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. But yeah, I mean, there's flaws there. I think they were more willing to call out the flaws than other markets have been, maybe.
Yeah.
Then we sit right now in Jack Nealon's. Immediately across the road is Panty Bar, which is home of Panty Bliss, and she's getting her own movie.
I hope it's better than Mrs. Brown's Boys the movie, because there's an Irish heroine I could get behind on film.
It will. Connor Hargan's directing.
Yes,
so
exactly.
We have some faith there, and so it started its funding campaign at the weekend. It's crowdfunding. Blinder Films are producing it. They will be putting money up to it, but then it's also looking for €50,000.
Almost 10,000 an hour ago. Which is,
damn fine.
It's only been a few days, isn't it?
Yeah, it has. It's only been since Saturday.
It'll make the target. I would be amazed if it doesn't.
Oh yeah, no, it definitely will.
And it's a documentary that could have that global appeal as well. But it could actually break out of that kind of niche market. There is a possibility of that.
They showed the 10-minute preview of it that they did for the funding. There's a 4-minute version on our website and on YouTube. The 10-minute version was shown during Gaze last weekend, alongside Pride, the African documentary. It's a great project. Yeah, it is a great project.
And there's a serendipity in it, in fact, that Conor Hargan was filming it anyway, before the whole controversy blew up. I mean, it's manna from heaven for a filmmaker. I mean, it really is. I mean, when something like
marks
that happens
itself.
Yeah, I mean, it should well do, yeah.
Mm.
So, I mean, yeah, I want to see it. Conor Hargan's a fine filmmaker. I mean,
fortuitous timing, and all the best of luck to Conor and Panty.
Mm.
Indeed. So, sad news the other day. It's not it's not the end, but it is a hiatus for Studio Ghibli.
The reporting of this, again, jumped the gun a little bit.
Yes.
I mean, it was gone, it was closed, it was done, no more films, something. Initially, four people actually got somebody to translate stuff properly.
Yeah, it was a mistranslation of the Japanese text where they basically said that they were going to put it in hiatus and re-examine what their strategy was. Studio Ghibli is a Japanese animation studio responsible for Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke, The Howl's Moving Castle, My Neighbor Totoro, Grave of the Firefly, some of the greatest animated films of all time. So
actually, if you're serious about animation or film in general, if one or two of those aren't in your top 100 films, I'd be very surprised. I mean, they're always up there, particularly in animation terms. I mean, they're right up there.
They're
operating film to film, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So they haven't got the financial clout of some of the big players, even though they do have a distribution deal with Disney. And I'm surprised that Disney just hasn't parachuted in it. Shed load of money.
Time will tell. I mean,
who knows? But they do have to. This is the problem. They do have to reevaluate what they're going to do now that their head honcho, the beloved Hayao Miyazaki, has retired. Their last two films have not done as well as many of their others at the Japanese box office,
which was a mainstay in some ways.
Yes,
he made a fortune, generally speaking.
Frozen is now the highest animated film at the Japanese box office like ever, and it's made phenomenal. Frozen is now the fifth highest grossing film of all time.
It's extraordinary, and mostly
because of the Japanese box office. Japanese box office has contributed like something in the region of 360 million to the bottom line. It's incredible.
And the Ghibli have to be looking at that performance thinking, so what have we done wrong?
The last Ghibli film, The Wind Rises, was Hayao Miyazaki's last film, and it did well, but it didn't do the stellar sort of business. It is an amazing film.
It's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful and heartbreaking. And I would have thought that Ghibli would have taken a pause to some degree anyway. I mean, you're losing somebody.
Yeah, their version of Walt Disney.
Yeah, it is, exactly. And without the clout of Disney or finance of Disney as well, like, if you think about it. It's understandable. I mean, I take a step back and look at what the future is, because do we have the filmmakers? That's the question.
Well, Goro makes good movies, but he's not a patch on his
career. I mean, I think to continue that magic, I mean, he's probably irreplaceable. That's the kind of sad thing in that sense.
He might be irreplaceable, but they could still have some very good filmmakers. You just need to find them and nurture them and support them.
No, exactly. And you would argue with that should have been done, or maybe it was tried to be done and didn't quite work out or whatever.
It's one of the few traditional animation houses as well, which is sad, because in this modern world, we have most of the animated films are computer generated, and traditional hand-drawn animation has waned.
Yeah.
We do have some smaller studios still attempting it, and we have Leica and Aardman doing the stop motion animation, but we do need diversity. I mean, Ernst and Sandstein, which you just watched recently, or Max and
Max and Mary,
an absolutely sensational.
Yeah, and hand-drawn animation, it can still be very powerful. I mean, the last Disney one was good. The last Disney animation was the one in the Bayou, The Princess and the Frog. And that was very good.
It was
a beautiful-looking film.
Did it succeed?
It didn't do well enough at the box office.
But that's probably not to do with the animation, though, in a lot of ways. You know, it's to do with story or advertising or whatever.
Yeah, but it was the death knell for that particular, for 2D at Disney. And so
I think you're right, you do need diversity. I mean, if every film starts looking the same...
There's an artistry to it. There is an artistry to computer animation as well, but there's an artistry
it's very different to the 2D.
Yeah, it is. You need everything.
Anyway, good luck, Ghibli. We look forward to hearing back from you soon.
Yeah, hopefully. I'm a huge fan. So it was very sad.
And also a shout out for the Screen Cinema, who have
Ghibli season.
Now that it's actually got a little bump in advertising in some ways, in a kind of sad way, but if you want to see those films, they're being shown in the original language with subtitles.
Yeah, from next week. Yeah, full details are up on the site, and it's one of the most popular.
I've seen a few of them. on the big screen and do get to see them. I hope we get to one or two, but
me too.
They're excellent.
They really are. And if you're going to see them, it is always best to see them in the original Japanese.
Yeah, even
and
though they do a really good job with the dubbing.
They do.
As good
they
as it can be done, but it doesn't quite have the same feel.
It's animated for Japanese.
It's Disney who get in the stars for the animate for the dub.
Yes, Lasseter generally oversees.
Yeah, Lasseter is a...
Yeah.
Mm. Is
a I just, he does a phenomenal job for that kind of thing. Like, it's as good a kind of dubbing as you can get, but it's still not as good as the original.
No.
I mean, that's the thing.
Moving on to we're getting into the sort of nonsensey news stories now.
My favourite bit.
Yes, it's the bits of you list. Well, superheroes. Yay. Sony have decided that they're going to release a female character-led Superman or Spider-Man-related film in 2017. This is to the extent that they've given us any information about.
Wait, hang on. A female-led Spider-Man something
spin-off,
or what?
Yeah.
Spin-off.
Yeah, Spider-Man spin-off.
So
female-led female character.
So they're giving us a spin-off of a character we don't know about from films that nobody particularly cares for. Yeah, I'm out.
Yeah. It's the aunt, isn't it?
See, the thing is, there's a number of different stories going around. So there's Felicia Hardy is in The Amazing Spider-Man 2. That's Black Cat from the comics, and is played by Felicity Jones. So she's already there in the universe. So it's possible that she could get...
I haven't seen The Amazing Spider-Man 2. How long is she in the film for?
She has a very, very brief cameo.
Right, that's not enough.
No.
And I'd like Felicity Jones. I think she has... You know, she certainly has a screen presence to try and carry a film, but... You know, we need a bit more character than that. Otherwise, it's just going to be another origin story, and I won't care.
There's also talk of Karen Gillan possibly playing Spider-Woman. And so
is there such a thing?
Yes.
Okay.
There was an interesting... Somebody put on Twitter that be the first female-led... super, like we were talking about earlier, superhero movie. And somebody put, what about Supergirl, you idiot?
Or Catwoman.
Or Catwoman, yeah. It's like... Actually, think about what you put up because you know these stories just get bandied about without any checking or fact checking or anything.
Yeah, Supergirl was
like,
years ago. That was
I remember it.
1984,
I saw it in the cinema, I think.
Who directed that?
Who the hell?
Jean Zwark.
There we go.
That's the
one. Helen Slater, though, looked fucking great in
this. Yeah, he's a relatively art house director.
Sorry,
what
do they think? Well, no, it's, one of my friends is one of his favorite films of all time, and basically he. He fell in love with her, and
yes, now he's married.
No, much to the despair of his brunette mother.
Right, this is getting weird.
No, it's just it's just what kids like. He was a kid because
I was
just,
a kid also.
Yeah.
I totally get that.
Yeah.
And you know what? Can I just ask? Has this all just been announced in the last few days?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like since Lucy.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Lucy has completely bucked any expectations. Because not only is it a female-led action movie, which has done spectacularly well, it's also one of those budget. It has a budget of $40 million, approximately. That's one of those films that they say does not make its money back.
So
this has
completely
got it back.
Yeah,
but then you look at the likes of Hercules, it's a $70 million movie, and it's not going to get the money back.
But then again,
different
movie.
That's something, though. And
that was that was in direct competition with it. Somebody had to win and someone had to lose.
It does not necessarily.
And when it comes to,
you can have a tie box office or within, you know, a million of one another.
Yeah, but I don't know. Always bet on ScarJo.
Yeah, well, this thing, Marvel, right, have repeatedly said that they will do a female-led superhero movie when they're ready, right? So
they'll
which
never
is,
be ready.
Actually,
yeah,
they didn't.
Which is Kevin Feige's way of saying I don't really care for one and I can't be bothered. And they have Scarlett Johansson as
They already have it there.
I would actually like to see a standalone Black Widow.
So would I, because she's interesting.
Yeah,
and
they've hinted at her past. And I'd say let her go out on her own. Don't tie her to Captain America or anyone else. Just go and ass kick on some mission. Just maybe invest with a bit more brains than Lucy.
Gina Carano lead as a superhero.
Yes,
she's the world's greatest actress.
That's the thing. She can kick ass.
But it helps.
Come on,
I think it helps.
That helps. It does help. And I think if you're going to make any kind of movie, superhero or otherwise, you need a good actor in the role. I am sorry. The excuse that you don't need to be able to actually play a superhero, that just diminishes the entire genre.
Also, the excuse that Marvel have of not being able to fit one in is bullshit.
They fit Black Widow into the Avengers.
They've got movie slots probably projected till the end of time, for goodness sake. I mean, it's a nonsense. It's an absolute nonsense.
They have an idea of what they're doing after 2028.
I mean, I could be dead by 2028. These guys are planning movies. I mean, for the love of God. Anyway.
2028.
I don't want to. I'll be. Yeah.
Oh, God, I'll be 42. No. Oh, that's horrible.
Shut up, Philip. I'll be 42 in 4 years.
Right.
You're not yet. You're not yet,
buddy.
And
it doesn't show.
You.
Talking of female led movies, more news. Paul Feig. And not like Kevin Feige, but Paul Feig has been.
Are they not brothers? So
yeah, he has been tapped allegedly to do Ghostbusters 3 with an all female cast.
Is this because they just couldn't get because Bill Murray couldn't be arsed?
Bill Murray won't do it.
Won't do, and he's right.
Of the problem is, right, if it's Paul Feig, that means that we're getting Melissa McCarthy.
It's two things here, right? One.
Who cares?
I want this franchise to die. This is an idiotic idea. It's been an idiotic idea for years because Dan Aykroyd wanted it to happen, and that's it. Honestly,
it's not everyone else's fault that his career has stalled.
And poor Hal Ramis is gone. So
yeah,
we don't want to see this project. Why don't you just do a different film with three or four different female characters and just call it something else? Why
get a similar conceit?
Just doing nonsense argument. It's an idiotic idea.
There's only one way this works, and that's if they get Sigourney Weaver to lead it.
Even then,
but
even
that's too close to tie to the original series, and we don't want the original series. I'm
going to
say this. You have me on the record saying this. But the original Ghostbusters, fun, but that's as much as it gets. It's no classic, and I am sorry.
It has great moments.
It has great moments, but it's no Back to the Future.
And it has a god awful sequel.
Yeah, that is a weird sequel.
I wouldn't have wanted to see the third one of those films when everybody was kind of coming off the second one.
Yeah.
God knows how many years later. I really don't want to see it.
Yeah, first one's fine. Good, even. But that's as much as I'm going to give it.
Bill Murray.
Exactly.
Doing Bill Murray. We came, we saw, we kicked his ass, etc.
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick. It's just...
And it has
it's
good
all
moments.
These one-liners.
It has a lot of weirdness with Rick Moranis and Sigourney Weaver and all sorts. And it's fun, but it's... A lot of it's cobblers of the highest order.
Indeed. Fun cobblers, but cobblers nonetheless.
Very good. Yeah, agreed.
So we have that.
Sorry.
No, you haven't. I am a huge Ghostbusters 1 fan. Ghostbusters 2 is fine. I watched it first as a child, so
it's not
you
great.
Associate with things.
It's not great.
Yeah. But anyway, we move on to the box office top 10.
Yes, let's. I'm sure this will dampen our temper.
Here.
Yeah. Not the Ghostbusters, man. I associate so much with Egon, it's not funny.
That's fair. I can understand.
That's fair. Yeah.
Anyway, at 10 in the Irish box office, it dropped down from last week's number 6, is Earth to Echo.
Great. Philip, do you want to take this one?
Is there an echo in here?
22% drop, so quite
that's not bad.
Yeah.
How much is it grossed?
It grossed.
All told.
All told, 182,504 euros.
200k, it'll have to do.
It probably won't be here next week, one would hope.
I really don't think so. Also, not here next week, another movie for kids, House of Magic. In its second week, it's actually up 50%. But it dropped in teaser count, but it's up 50%.
Wow.
Bloody kids' clubs.
But its cumulative revenue is €122,356 euro. And
judging from the quality of the trailers, that's probably more than most people expected.
But animation, eh?
Gee, where have I heard that before?
We're
repeating ourselves again.
You'll hear it again.
Yeah.
At 8, straight in at number 8, Step Up. 5, all in. So,
my movie of the week. Even though I haven't seen the Step Up.
All in. Movies. Yeah, I'm certainly feeling all in after that.
Yeah.
Good grief.
How's it done? Okay.
It did not do.
No, it
did.
God,
it
did.
53,000 euros, so barely over.
I read somewhere that costs a ridiculous amount of money.
May very well be, but I mean, it's made for its audience. The people who went to see Step Up 1 through 4 are the only people who are going to go see Step Up.
The fact that we have to live in a universe where you have to use a phrase like Step Ups 1 through 4, that just
hopefully that'll be the end of it.
We can hope.
I suspect not.
All in, you can either stay in the game or you go bust. So
Judging by those figures, I'd say they've gone bust.
Yeah.
So I hope they have.
You mean both.
So at 7, And in its sixth week in the charts,
May.
How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Yes.
The utterly fantastic.
Almost up to 1.5 million. It's doing very well.
Up 6% as well. So Jeepers. Two animated films up and the other one holding fairly well.
Good
so,
Lord.
Yeah. It's,
we need to make an animated movie. Because
the weather was bad over the weekend. So yeah. This is what...
We need to make it rain.
And a long weekend, and adults need to entertain the children.
Yeah, a long weekend would have meant that there was more of a Sunday evening pull than there normally would be. That's about the extent of it. The Monday figures don't count.
I hate all these anomalies. Can't we just have two normal weekends in a row? For God's sake.
So grumpy, that one.
Yes, dear.
This is the new grumpy me. Get
like,
used to it.
This is like doing a podcast with George and Mildred.
George!
Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon.
Yeah, maybe.
At six, in its second week, down 47%, so despite it raining, people still did not want to go see The Rock as Hercules.
Rocky.
It's
brilliantly Rocky.
It has one of those movies that is not as bad as anybody feared, not quite as good as anybody hoped. So, meh, all around.
Part of me wants to see this.
The film.
It's the part of me that loves John
Hurt. The film shows... A number
Everybody
of the 12 labors in the trailer
And
dispenses of all of those 12 labors within the first 10 minutes of the film. So it's one of the rare occasions when almost every scene in the trailer is in the first 10 minutes of the film. Which
at least you're not getting any spoilers.
You see some stuff from later.
Some, but not all.
Yeah.
Crucially.
Ian McShane needs to choose his roles better.
Ian McShane is buying a new house. I mean, at this stage it doesn't really matter. I don't think he really cares, and why should he?
I hope it's constructed from wood and up in the Dakota Hills, circa 1840.
As I wipe away a tear.
I know. Oh, just somebody make that Deadwood movie already.
Jesus.
3 hours of it. Just
Call
do
hours.
It!
Yeah.
Yes! Quick, somebody get them on the line
Nick
now.
Cave to write the Coen brothers direct...
Cave and Ellis to do the score.
Deadwood.
Yeah, I could watch that. Yeah.
Watch it. This could be the greatest movie ever.
Indeed. Indeed.
At five, the greatest movie ever. Purge Energy. No, sorry.
Even you couldn't finish that line without keeping a straight face.
Down 38% to take 63,476 euro or 180 euro more than Hercules.
How much all sold so far?
266,260 euro so far. So
meh. The sequel that I'm interested in, not the film, I actually despised.
I'm pretty sure the original made more money than this one.
I think it might have, but I had Ethan Hawke. I mean,
yeah, this
might,
one doesn't really have a star power.
That getaway film had Ethan Hawke too, and it didn't do any sort of money at all.
Plus, he's in Boyhood. I went there.
Did you hear that Richard Linklater was being asked about Boyhood and what he would do after it? And he said, what happens if Mason gets on a train and goes to Europe?
Don't sully that trilogy with that.
Also, don't even dare even try to link that together.
No.
Linklater.
There was a gag there somewhere. You tried.
Not in the way I put it together.
That's when you trod very hard on the punchline.
Crushed
it. Absolutely crushed it.
Damn near killed it.
And left it just dazed and
at
confused.
Four, and jokes being strewn around like the killing room floor, like cows in an abattoir. Mrs. Brown's Boys, the movie.
Speaking of the killing room floor,
3.6 million.
Ugh, go away, people! What are you doing to me?
It's
staggering.
It's a phenomenon. I mean, it's still 59 screens.
Highest grossing film of the year in Ireland.
And that's what makes it right.
Can't ignore it, though. It's 6 weeks in, shows no sign of slowing
12%
down.
12% drop, that is...
Minimum. It's astonishing.
For a sixth week, that is incredible.
I think I better go get us another drink.
At three, in its first week, straight in at number three.
What?
Yep, the Nut Job.
How?
And we have another animated film movie, making four of the top 10 animated films.
Yeah, Donald Clark's review, that made me laugh.
His best reviews always do.
He wasn't a fan.
Nobody is. I think it's languishing somewhere around 12% on Rotten Tomatoes at the moment.
Yeah.
It opened in like April or something in the US. It opened really early this year and then died on its feet. And I
110,000?
Yeah,
horrendous, like.
No. Again, the kids needed to be entertained on the wet long weekend. Don't get me started on Wet Long Weekend. Good grief, the rain.
Of Caspian. At 2.
Strictly no Game of Thrones references.
Oh, I'm sorry. At 2, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Third week in the charts, down from last week and the weeks before.
Oh dear.
One spot, 28%, which is a very.
Caesar's reign has ended.
Still, 3,500 per location. That's that'd be respectable in a first week.
It would, 1.8 million overall. It should comfortably get to 2 million.
Oh, 2.5.
Yeah.
The 2.5 is what I'd be aiming for. So comfortably into the top 10 films of the year.
Good on them.
No beef with that. Officers. Have you seen it yet, Jay?
No, I have not.
Get on that.
I will. I've been busy.
Haven't we all? I wish I'd been busy enough to miss number one, but go on.
At number one, and a
straight
staggering 428,000 straight in number one for the 8th highest opening of the year, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy.
Now,
all together now, hooked on a feeling.
While I get some popcorn and watch what happens.
Because,
right,
okay. Niall's seen it.
Let me
I've
set this up,
it.
Right. Philip did the review on the website, which was a slightly disappointing to people who loved the film. 2.5 stars out of 5.
Trolling.
Trolling, apparently.
I
he
must,
did not troll.
Yeah.
If nothing else, he explained why he didn't like it and what the reasons for it were. I've yet to see the film, so I can only go with what he says. But it's a convincing argument, irrespective of whether
thank you.
I agree with it or not.
But I'm so proud of this review because it got me my first accusation of being a troll on an internet board.
You finally made it.
I've made it. I have made it at last. Hear that, Ma? Top of the world.
Top of the bridge.
I know.
Meanwhile, Niall has seen it
since.
One
suspects, and you'll hear Niall's review
I've
now.
Seen it multiple times.
Oh dear. That's all you need to know.
Niall is propelling this movie to number one.
And I freaking adore this film. I thought it was so much fun. It is gubbins of the highest order. It is.
But isn't that a criticism, though?
That is
yes,
a criticism.
It is, yes.
But are you not framing it in that way,
no,
though?
So.
That's
the film has many flaws.
Good. I'm glad you acknowledge that.
But I don't care, because it's just so much fun.
I'm
Philip, the fun accusation, you have lack of fun?
I have to say, hearing all this talk of fun, and I had some, but I've had much more fun. The Avengers, for example, that's a heck of a lot
of
fun.
Oh, The Avengers
fun.
Is a better film. There's no doubt.
No, it's not only a better film, it's a lot more fun. And I'm sorry, where is the fun in this? Is it in the fact that it has a PG-13 rated swearing raccoon?
No, it's
80s music.
Wait, the 80s
music. The opening scene when he's doing the little dance and
well, at least it'll contribute to the re-emergence of Redbone as a significant musical force, but so what? This is kind of anachronism. Tarantino did this stuff 20 years ago.
Yes.
So what?
But it's the kind of movie that my inner child adores. That my inner nerdy, geeky child loves.
Okay,
film.
That's Niall, the inner geeky, nerdy child.
Critic has a much harder time with it. Right, so I came out of it, the first showing, going, I should have loved that, but I didn't. Right? This is my initial reaction. This is my reaction coming out the very first time. I was like, I should have loved that, but I didn't.
And why didn't you?
Because it has gaping plot issues. It has big plot holes. It truncates a lot of characters.
It's episodic.
It has an incredible amount of exposition dumped in like one go.
A lot.
Which is
exposition.
Yeah.
There's no more.
But that was always a risk because it's got so many characters to set up.
Yeah, exactly. It is very much by the numbers film. It's crucially
a by the numbers Marvel
it's
movie.
Adhering to the Marvel formula. It has a god awful score.
It really does. Oh, Tyler Bates, stop that.
The score is just so generic. It's just so bland.
It really is.
But the soundtrack, on the other hand, is amazing. So,
I can't lie. Those tunes, I was humming them afterwards.
It's got a great performance by Chris Pratt.
It's not great. It's not Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark.
Are they aiming for that?
Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark. It's aiming for Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones.
It's not that.
That's what it's aiming for.
Yeah, but it's not that. It's just, so he's a little cocky, he's a little sassy. I'll quote my review of the film. Harrison Ford would have told this guy to stop prancing like a tit and get on with it.
It's a good line.
Yeah, no, it is. I will give you that. I came out of it not loving it, right? The very first time
okay.
I saw it, right?
Okay.
And then I went back to see it again. And I loved it. And then I went back to see it again. And I love it even more. So the more I see this film, the more I'm willing to forgive its issues because it's just such a
can
good
I ask
time.
It sounds like you're forcing yourself to love it.
It does. It doesn't it?
It's like, I will watch this. Like, this is Clockwork Orange. It's like, put them in your eyes.
No,
and you're gonna stare
it. You're right. It is Clockwork Orange. It's a sin! It's a sin!
It's the opposite of Under the Skin for me. Because
I don't know why you'd crowbar Under the Skin.
Don't you dare crowbar Under the Skin.
I should love Under the Skin as well.
Yeah, you should.
I really don't. And the more I watch it, the less I like it.
But basically, what you're saying... Hold on. Okay, listen. Whatever about, you know, the divide between Niall the Critic and Niall the Fanboy. But basically what you're saying is, oh my God, Guardians of the Galaxy is all such fist, bang, wallop, and I love it. Versus Under the Skin, oh my God, this is so boring. Is that it? Is that what we're saying here?
Yes.
Right.
Answer.
Do you see that? Do you see that? It's my case, and it's rested.
So what? So I had a good time. I enjoyed the film.
Right, but I'm just saying you need to look at superhero movies as we do every other movie. We have to get beyond the enjoyment factor alone. Yeah, on the enjoyment factor
alone.
Do you
really think that we do? The film made $165 million in its opening weekend.
Well, the public loves something that isn't quite...
Transformers 4 has made $1 billion.
Yeah, there you go.
Quality has nothing to do with anything.
Exactly. The public go for Transformers 4 and Mrs. Brown's Boys.
The thing about Transformers was... Transformers made an incredible amount of money as well, but it's... God awful, and it is not a good time in cinema.
But there are people,
this
and you know there are people that will tell you that Transformers 4 is excellent and it's great fun. That's really entertaining. So yeah. why is their opinion less?
The same people are trying to tell us the same thing about 1-3, probably.
No, I'm not suggesting that Guardians Galaxy is
much the same way
is Transformers.
How I feel about the Expendables, where I know that the film has an incredible amount of
okay. Listen,
problems.
Transformers. The
I
Transformers
really
have no characters.
I really enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay, Guardians of the Galaxy is a step up from Transformers because Transformers is offering nothing approaching character, nuance, or subtlety. Guardians of the Galaxy has characters, but it's not doing anything particularly interesting with them. I mean, at the end of it all, it's the basic setup from something like Star Wars. You have a leader, a woman, a muscle, a near mute, and a sassy, animally mutant-y thingy coming along all for the ride to go and have hijinks.
Yeah, no, it is. It is a very tried and tested formula, and
it then do something different with it, for God's
also,
sake.
Can I just say what it sounds like, and I think both of you are getting the same thing to some degree, that it isn't...
It's not a good film. But it's a very enjoyable film.
But aren't we in the business of saying whether it's good or bad, as opposed to enjoyable?
I am saying that it's not good,
okay.
But I am saying that
could
I
have fooled
it.
You know, until you made that distinction, you could have fooled me.
It has, as a film...
I think I'll take those points on this, though.
As an experience, it does.
It sounds very calculating as well. It sounds like it's designed within an inch of its life.
It is. It really is.
I'm always very nervous of that kind of thing, because that kind of thing, whilst might have the initial kind of pull, I suspect 5 or 10 years down the line, that may not hold out. Like, and as Philip said about Avengers earlier on, I think the Avengers is terrific. And it's a miraculous thing that puts it all together. And granted, it's had all the previous movies set of characters, agreed.
But Avengers gets the balance
yes.
way better yeah. than Guardians of the Galaxy does. Because Gamora is useless.
She really is.
She's just useless. Nebula is useless. Ronan is useless. Thanos is useless.
Thanos is dreadful.
There's just so
not
many.
Just a dreadful looking thing. I hope Whedon improves.
But Rocket's
on
great. Groot is great.
Groot is good. Rocket.
Even Dave,
not,
but this is Drax. Dave, is great.
Drax is actually the best of the lot, I think, because
he takes everything literally.
Yeah, it's a neat conceit, and between the bulk, that conceit, and a potentially interesting backstory, which of course is given to us in a couple of lines of exposition.
Yeah,
I think it makes sense.
It is very much a tell rather than a show experience in all of their backstories, except for
except for Chris Pratt, except for Star-Lord.
Yeah, but the problem with his story is it's the most horribly manipulative and calculated piece of emotional claptrap I have seen in a mainstream movie in quite some time. The opening scene is his younger self watching his mother succumb to cancer.
Yeah.
It's horrid.
Yeah, no, it is. It's that's a miscalculation.
That is extremely miscalculation.
But then the Raiders of the Lost Ark homage
rip off.
Yeah, is wonderful.
It's a rip off. It's only wonderful because it has Redbone's "Come and Get Your Love," a tune which nobody has heard in a long time, and is bloody great.
No,
it's suddenly
you. He's sliding around having fun. He grabs a rat and sings into it. It is fun.
They wasted Jaimon Hounsou.
They did.
They wasted Lee Pace. They wasted John C. Reilly. Peter
Serafinowicz.
Glenn Close. Benicio Del Toro prancing around in Jim Jarmusch's wardrobe for some reason. It's just
I need to see this.
You really do.
I'll see it tomorrow.
Please do.
I love it despite its flaws.
I'm sorry, there are too many flaws there for me to like it. There are flaws in a lot of the Marvel stuff, but some of them I can forgive because they have a little bit more.
But if I was to rank it, it would be in the lower half of the Marvel films.
But there's so many people I've read that saying it's the best Marvel film yet.
It's not.
Far from it.
But it's an interesting thing though, because what you're saying, right, and I totally get the fact that you're saying you love it.
Are
we saying then that there are people who are having the same reaction as you are having to it, but not actually have any kind of assessment of what it is? Because people are saying it's the best Marvel film today because they enjoyed it, as opposed to saying, hang on a second, is this actually a really good film or is it not a really good film? Because it sounds like people are not actually critiquing it anyway.
It's a barely passable over 2 hours. But once you start to think about it, oh dear.
It's what happened with Boyhood.
People are ignoring the flaws.
Everyone said it's great. Right?
Yeah.
So you go in and
thinking
it's great.
Yeah.
And you come out thinking it's great.
Yeah.
And therefore it's great.
So basically I just did what I was meant to do as a critic. Open mind, and weigh up pros and cons at the end of it.
Yeah.
And
this
I did.
Sounds like mass delusion we're talking about in real time.
This is mass delusion. You are being hypnotized by the studio's public.
It is a very colourful.
I feel like Roddy
McDowell.
I feel like Rowdy Roddy Pepper
and
They Live all of a sudden.
Time. But it's not art.
No.
I am wearing the sunglasses from They Live. I am. I'm convinced of this now.
You're going to have the world's longest alleyway fight later on.
Well, I am here. I am here to chew bubblegum and kick ass.
And you're all out of bubblegum.
I am all out of bubblegum. Now send me Keith, David, and let's get on with it. For God's sake. This is nonsense.
That's the Philip rant for this week, everybody.
Yep.
We'll move on.
Yes, we will move on. But
oh, thank heavens.
Did you notice in the top 10, Boyhood is now gone?
So I did notice that.
Yes.
And I am not weeping.
So now you sound like you hate Boyhood.
Do you know what? This is actually part of a thing yesterday where I was giving a few tweets about the reactions to Boyhood and Guardians of the Galaxy and how everybody is just loving them. But a few articles have come along and a couple of critics, most notably Kenneth Duran, have come along to say that Boyhood if further down the line it's going to get a reassessment and people are going to wonder what all the hype was about.
Yes.
Want to have to be in a position of "I told you so." It's
just
the way it's working
out.
I'm
absolutely fine.
It's the way it's going to work out. But I don't know. I don't want to be in that position because it'll just make me look like I have a superiority complex. The fact that I do is besides the point.
That's true. We'll move on, Philip.
As I get a wry look from Niall there. Oh, really?
I didn't think you had a superiority complex. I just thought you were superior.
Well,
I didn't. Yeah, I didn't know that you were building.
It's
a
complex.
I didn't know that you were building a complex around.
That's a very expensive development, let me tell you.
So, we're going to move on to what's out this week.
I'm sorry. Is this a podcast or is this my visit with the therapist? It's far cheaper.
It is. Come on, this week,
what's out this week? So we have maybe a couple of big releases.
But most of them are running scared of the Marvel machine. So the big releases are the In-Betweeners movie, the In-Betweeners 2, which is out on Wednesday, not screening for critics.
Oh, I wonder why.
I found that alarming.
No, screen for Greeks in Ireland. Did screen in the UK.
Yes, it's premiere as we record this.
I couldn't find a review of it today, so obviously it's not been...
I think it's embargoed.
For the love of God. Just reviewed it. God. We know what we're going to get.
I'm going to see it on Wednesday evening. So.
Oh, okay. Well, we definitely know what we're going to get then.
I may see it as well.
Which is tomorrow. I'm going to see it tomorrow.
Anybody seen the first one?
Yes.
And?
I enjoyed it.
It's okay.
I haven't seen it, but I like the show.
I like the show as well.
Yeah, it does your will.
I am not Will. Oh, come on. Give me half a chance,
the
please.
The line of the night, ladies and gentlemen. Niall, bravo.
I may not be here next week after that. Oh, you.
He's going to have a rant to go home and tell his mammy.
Oh, my God.
Just don't forget your briefcase, though. That's the only thing I'd say. Sorry. We'll move on.
Anyway, The In-Betweeners.
Oh, that hurts.
It's okay.
That really hurts.
Popular Channel 4 sitcom turned into a movie that did rather well. Actually, did surprisingly in the UK and here as well. So this is the sequel. Instead of lads going to Crete like they did last time, this time they're in Australia.
The third one had them in space.
But this is going back to somebody we've mentioned already this evening, Donald Clark, the Irish Times. Hello, Donald, by the way. He wrote an article before the release of Mrs. Brown's Boys, the movie, about the phenomenon of TV to film adaptations, particularly of British sitcoms.
How do you always go abroad?
Always. And The In-Betweeners, the first movie, that was certainly a prime example of that. So we acknowledged the
Carry On Crete.
Something like that. But he did at least acknowledge that Mrs. Brown's Boys, the movie, at least didn't have her
going
at
home.
She stayed at home.
Yeah.
Which is can only be a godsend for the world because she managed to insult enough nationalities from here. In-Betweeners, the sequel, I don't know how well they're expecting it to do. I can't imagine it to do quite as well as the first.
I think it'll do pretty well, though.
It should do.
The first one.
Yeah. Because it's been so long since the show ended. That came just after.
Yeah, well, they've been running reruns on.
Yeah, it's never ending really on TV.
Something had to take over Friends and Pete's and E4 at some point, surely.
That's Trevor saying that they needed to shave twice a day in order to keep the continuity right.
That's actually depressing. Yeah, it's actually really depressing news. Because I'm now 40.
If any of those actors are watching, we apologise.
Their 20-year-old sons could be in the movie.
Movie wankers.
Well, Laura Haddock, who was in the last In-Betweeners movie, she was in Guardians of the Galaxy. She played the mother.
Who was she?
She was the girl that Will was after in the In-Betweeners movie.
I see. She's gone a long way.
But she's also been in Da Vinci's Demons, and she actually had
a line?
A cameo in Captain America, the first one, the first Avenger. And so they've been trying to see if they can tie that character that she played in Captain America, the first Avenger, to her character in Guardians of the Galaxy.
I'm sure somebody will.
I'm sure somebody is just that pernickety.
Somebody knows.
Niall? You did.
No, I read it in a piece earlier. Unfortunately, I did not notice it.
Fortunately, you did not notice it.
No, because if it had been first, the traffic would have been very, very high.
What's that line Jeremy Irons has in Margin Call? There are three ways to get ahead in this business. Be first, be smarter, or cheat. Well, I don't cheat. And while I think we have a hell of a lot of smart people in this building, it's always easier to just be first. And I think the same principle will apply to the In-Betweeners movie. It's had one already. I don't think the second will do quite as well. I brought that around.
You did. You really tied the room together there. You did.
I'm not a rug.
Speaking of sequels that will not do as well as their originals, Planes 2 is out as well. Planes 2 Fire and Rescue.
Considering nobody remembers Planes,
this whole franchise has actually existed, possibly without the first Cars movie, obviously I'm more aware of because it was an actual Pixar release that John Aspen directed, and it was like, really, this? But anyway, since then, this whole thing has just continued without my knowledge. But every time I kind of glance at the poster, like, is that another one? They just keep making these movies. Who goes to see them?
We should point out that the Planes movies, the first one and now this, they're not Pixar properties. They're Disney
Tunes.
But there are linkages.
Oh yeah,
in the
from
context.
Do people care?
Exactly. I mean, it's a universe, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a pity because it tends to sully Pixar by proxy. I made a gag and I wasn't even aware of it.
Right.
Yes, yeah. Thank you, thank you.
Right.
Mind you, some would argue that Pixar are sullying themselves just fine on their own. But
they're about to undo everything, every word of that with Inside Out. When Inside Out comes out,
we'll see.
As much crow as you can.
Hang on a second. People shouldn't eat crow because they've been making substandard.
Substandard films for a while now. Cars 2, Monsters University.
Monsters University is not very good.
It's okay, but compared to the first, and I'm not even a huge fan of the first. But no, it's just underwhelming. It's okay.
Planes 2.
Must be.
Must be, because the reviews for this have not been good so far.
So we have Dusty the crop duster. He is now
crop duster.
Yeah, well, he became a racing plane in the last movie in Planes 1, and so now he found out that he's not able to race anymore because he has some sort of sports injury, aka a mechanical defect.
And
so now he's going off to join the fire service, basically. Yeah.
So basically what we're saying is, because he has a couple of dings, this guy is getting really indecisive about his career. If I were like this, I wouldn't be able to hold down a job. I'm sorry, this plane is really indecisive. I don't dig what he's doing.
It's voiced by Dane Cook.
Dane Cook, Dusty, whatever you are, get your rear in gear and pick a career. And I'm rhyming now.
We'll see in Planes 3 what he does.
So
here's the thing. Planes is part of a trilogy, right? So Planes 2 is the second part. Second one is part of that trilogy. And the third one is the yet untitled Planes sequel, which will be out next year. After that, they're moving on to boats and trains.
Oh, crap.
Who cares? Nobody sees them. Nobody wants to know.
Yeah. So,
they make enough money to justify
this? I imagine they're cheap.
Planes came out last year, right? Planes 1, right? Planes 2 came out 13 months later.
So we could expect Planes 3 in about 12 to 13 months, right on schedule?
In America, Planes came out on the day that MH17 was shot from the sky
over
Ukraine. So you really couldn't time that worse if you tried.
That's unlucky. Really unlucky. That's as lucky as it gets.
I almost say I wouldn't wish that on any studio, but you know.
I've
seen a lot of footage of Planes 2, and I'm not getting laughs. There's nothing.
Don't care.
No, me either. And when your headliner is Dane Cook,
I'm out.
Yeah, that's it. Me too.
I was never in, really, though. But I'm definitely out.
You're sounding like Jerry Seinfeld in the episode The Outing. I'm out. Wasn't even in.
So Planes.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No.
Though I'm sure there's plenty wrong with Planes too.
Indeed.
Planes 2 is one of two animated movies out this week. The other being
I'm surprised.
The Unbeatables. Which is also known as Metagull or
Underdogs.
Or Underdogs, yes.
I have had looked into this. This looks relatively unremarkable, as a lot of these animated films are. Yeah. But it's directed by Juan José Campanella, who has won an Oscar for his drama The Secret in Their Eyes. Personally, I think it's a very overrated film.
It's okay.
It's got a lot of tonal and plotting problems. But the fact that he goes from that to something like this, beggar's belief.
Animated film about a team of footballers. Right.
Foosball players.
I've seen the trailer for it. It looks dreadful.
We haven't seen this.
They missed the trick by not releasing this 2 months ago.
Yeah,
for God's sake, why didn't they?
I really don't understand that one. But, it looks, bland.
It's already made its 200,000 at the box office.
Probably.
It's going to be there for 2 weeks at the very least.
We will acknowledge it when we look at
the top 10.
It'll
be number 4, it'll be number 8, and then it'll go bye-bye.
Yeah, pretty much. Just wait until we check next week. No, wait until next week and we check the top 10, and she is at number 4.
Please be number 4.
Just for the sake of some kind of prescience. That would be wonderful.
It'd be lovely.
Continuing on in the wider releases, yes. We also have God's Pocket.
Oh, I can't.
Yes.
The reviews have been mixed, but I want to see this because it has so many people I love.
One of the great casts of the year.
the late lamented Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, don't even get me started.
Jay, pass me tissues. But besides that, John Turturro, Richard Jenkins, Christina Hendricks, Eddie Marson, and all directed by the Silver Fox himself, Roger Sterling, a.k.a. John Slattery.
I'm in. You could tell me this is the worst film I've ever made, I'm still going to see it. It doesn't matter. I'm there.
Ditto.
A cast like that, yeah. you drink it up.
It's the reviews, as I say, have been mixed. It's a story of,
God's Pocket, the area of Philadelphia, isn't it?
So yes, exactly. And some, a young guy is murdered, and PSH is kind of the cleaner in all of us, and he, it all gets rather complicated with the guy's mother, played by Christina Hendricks, looking to find out what's happened. And yeah, it's
the stills,
it sounds
the
like
stills look beautiful in it, I've seen like, they do. The posters superb.
It sounds like lesser Killing Them Softly, but you know what, that film's so good.
Do you know what,
I'd watch it anyway.
This has a late flowering Sidney Lumet feel off this kind of thing, you know, those when, you know, when you've been for Devil Knows You're Dead kind of
put
thing.
That on it's, the poster
it's probably
damn.
Not going to be that good, but you know, it has that feeling of that, you know, some little classical.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
We shall see.
I think it could be an interesting little potboiler. Plus, just that cast. PSH,
great.
Oh Christ, we miss you. Sorry.
What Philip said.
Yes, indeed.
I'm sorry, I'm getting maudlin now. Let's move on.
We also have Lilting, which is opening in a few cinemas.
Yes, indeed. This is... actually, this played the same time as we saw Boyhood at the IFI Open Day.
Ah.
Kind of wish I'm really starting to
wish you should have mentioned
Lilting
anyway.
Yeah. It's a drama from Hong Kao, a Cambodian born British director. Stars Ben Whishaw as a young man trying to cope with the death of his partner, and he does this by going to see his partner's mother, who doesn't seem exactly sure that her son was gay in the first place.
Yeah.
I don't know, this... I don't know, sounds a bit
Ben
heavy.
Very good,
but it's so. Yeah, I like Ben Whishaw as an actor. He's a fine talent, and I think it could be well worth a watch. It's getting very positive reviews thus far.
Then we have a number of To Catch a Thief has been reissued.
Prime entertaining hitch.
I haven't seen this in probably 20 odd years. I probably need to rewatch it.
I probably haven't seen it in at least 10, so
I vaguely
I'm with
recall
you.
It. I remember Cary Grant's face.
I remember watching it as part of Hitchcock Marathon, and it all blends into one there. So
they tend to. There's a lot of similarities.
Single thing about this one.
Ultimately, I think it's just it's North by Northwest's younger. No, it's actually it's older, but not quite as interesting.
Well, I imagine it ain't top tier Hitchcock. Anyway.
No, but that doesn't mean it's not entertaining.
Oh, no, I mean,
besides,
always worth watching.
Plus, Cary Grant, probably the most charming man to ever grace a cinema screen. And Grace Kelly.
And our
exactly.
Final one, isn't it? Final one.
Before she went off to Monaco and become Nicole Kidman.
Yes.
Which I wouldn't wish on anybody.
Which is a fate worse than death.
Beautiful.
So do we have one Lighthouse exclusive. That's All This Mayhem.
All This Mayhem. This has been reviewed for us by Mark. His review can be read on the side. This is the documentary about skateboarding.
Yes.
The Melbourne lads who went to the States and got involved in a pretty heavy party scene from what...
It sounds like a story you've heard before.
Yes.
But it's...
Well, you have
Lords of Dogtown, Murder Ball, a lot like that. But these kind of stories, if they're done well, they're... eminently watchable, if not more so, and Mark really liked this.
It's
so
the kind of thing, in terms of on Netflix, I'll watch.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's what it sounds like to me.
Sounds interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds very interesting. Yeah. And I like a rags to riches story, provided you can do something original with it, for God's sake.
Then the IFI has two exclusives, Wackolda.
Oh,
this sounds interesting.
And
I suspect it's probably not as interesting as
it's a twist on the Mengele story.
Yes.
It's told from the point of view of an Argentinian family who lived with a man who he had a name, but of course they didn't realise it was Joseph Mengele. So and let hijinks ensue.
Yeah, well, you got to love when one of those turns up on your door.
Indeed you do know.
Yes. Why, Dr. Kessler, hello.
Oh my god, it's Hermann Göring.
Albrecht Speer. Where have I heard that name before?
He's the one building my complex.
That's very. He's on fire tonight. That's very good.
I did not see that coming. And the other eye, if I want,
you said you can't laugh at World War II.
A lot of people, I think you'll find. I feel bad now. Yeah, I'm sorry. Apologies.
And the other one, the eye, is Welcome to New York.
This is my film of the week. I think this is one I'm
going to watch this all right.
Any film that gets a mixture of praise and disgust, you know, there's an interesting director behind it, and indeed there is, Philip.
Abel Ferrara.
Yes.
Now, there's a man who...
who couldn't get arrested for the last decade in terms of distribution terms.
No, he's... Oh, he always knows how to get an audience...
riled up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And how better to rile them up than to have Gerard Depardieu play a version of Dominic Strauss-Kahn.
Yeah. This looks like it could be magnificent.
Oh, this looks like...
It could also be Cobblers. I mean...
I think it's going to be a nice mix of both.
Yeah, Ferrara, we haven't really seen any cinematic terms probably since the 1-2 of The Addiction and The Funeral, which are two terrific and very different films,
and quite underrated too.
A year apart, I think they were released, and they were very, very good, and very underrated, particularly The Funeral. The Addiction, I think, got a lot of kind of art house credit, but I think The Funeral has a lot of kind of simmering rage.
I keep mistaking The Addiction for a Jarmusch film. I don't know why.
Sounds like something he'd make.
It's called Only Lovers Left Alive.
Yeah, but it's his type of title.
Definitely.
But I think this could be. I want to be smacked in the face of this film.
It's got Jacqueline Bisset, so there's a good chance of that. Yeah. Got me in.
I recommend. That's my film of the week.
Very good.
We haven't seen it, but you know, it's
a recommendation.
It's made for you, Jay.
That's exactly what it is. It's made that in God's pocket.
That said, though, I'm more keen to see his film version of The Life of Pasolini.
Yes, coming soon.
That's coming soon, but this will be a nice taster. I have no doubt.
Indeed, it will.
And so, finally, there's news of that they're going to have a Stanley Kubrick season in The Lighthouse. Yes,
and it's. It's everything, isn't it? I mean,
absolutely everything. Back to Fear and Desire.
Yeah.
Which everything except Napoleon.
That just hurts. That really, really hurts.
You really show the first half of AI as well.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Do you know what? For the sake of completion, yes.
AI, damn it. Except and remove two of the endings.
No, no. Yeah. Well,
last 15 minutes.
Remove the last 15. You know what? AI, if you did remove the last 15 minutes, that's a fine film.
There's so much good in that.
Jude Law is fine. Great. The visuals are stunning. Yeah. One of my favorite shots in all of Spielberg is that scene where that craft, Jude Law's, is flying in towards New York, and all you can see the Statue of Liberty is her hand jutting out of the water. Mm. I love that. It's one of those beautiful little Spielbergian great shots.
I may rewatch this tonight.
Ooh, good choice. Anyway. In any case, yes, this is all 12 of Kubrick's cinematic endeavours, starting with Fear and Desire.
Next month.
This starts next month. Yeah,
continues till November, doesn't it?
From mid-September to mid-November.
I had a look at the list today, just had a brief run through because, you know, always to remind yourself of greats.
Yeah.
But I have seen 7 of them on the big screen already.
Wow.
Nicely done.
Which is, I'm kind of surprised by.
I am too. That
I've seen
impressive.
The Killing, Doctor Strangelove, Clockwork Orange, The Shining, Barry Lyndon in 70mm in the IFI last year. Oh my god, that's an experience. Do go to see that if you're only making one trip. Barry Lyndon,
2001.
Yeah, but 2001 gets the big screen treatment a lot more.
Yeah,
I mean, it's extraordinary on the big screen. It is, but Barry Lyndon is something else.
I think then this is the time to ask the obvious question: best Kubrick film for you guys.
2001.
It's a tough choice, isn't it?
But I mean,
so many good ones.
Eyes Wide Shut, which I think is also a masterpiece. Clockwork Orange as well. Eyes Wide Shut is brilliant. You're wrong, Philip. You don't know.
No. Christ! It's awful. It's half an hour of of magnificence, and
no,
then
not.
It
you
dissolves
know what?
Into
re-watch
nonsense.
It in the cinema.
You want me to pay to rewatch Eyes Wide Shut? Are you nuts?
Do.
Oh,
and you shall.
It's the ultimate control freak meets the ultimate perfectionist. That was never going to work.
No,
it does work.
No. I mean, yeah, the fact
you're
that
both insane.
No. The fact that it is as good as it is a testament to Kubrick's skill. But working with Cruise was never a good plan.
Cruise is great in it.
No, Cruise is fine.
He's the most eager to please actor there is. Yeah, meeting a guy who can never be
but
happy.
But he's very, very. He carries the film. He's in practically every scene. He carries the film. So
I
well.
Know. I mean,
I think he's excellent.
He was far better in Magnolia for my money. But
I disagree.
I'll tell you who is excellent in it. Kidman. Yeah. She's for so much of it, she's impossible to read. She is a femme fatale in all but name. She's great. And
I'm
as I say, I love
him. Dr. Strangelove does for my
Heart Tiger. I mean,
that's
there's
a great
five
choice,
or six that if that somebody names it, it's like, yeah, I can see that. Given they, I'd probably give an answer.
Exactly. I'm the same way. I mean, today, and a lot of these, admittedly, my favourite is probably The Shining. But that can change.
Yeah.
Many days it will be Dr. Strangelove. I could also go for. And this might be a slightly unpopular choice, Full Metal Jacket.
I don't see that as being unpopular.
I don't think it's his best. I think there's great in it. But I don't think it's his best.
I think in filmic terms, it's the Vietnam War is his most accessible.
Yeah.
And it's very well made.
It's very
despite
well made.
The harsh dichotomy between the first half
and
the second half. Once you get over that,
the second half works though. I mean, people
it
say
does
work.
Work.
It does work, but maybe a little too obvious, maybe.
The fact that it's on the nose doesn't change the fact that it's still intense as heck.
Oh,
agreed.
That's great.
Completely agree.
Given the choice, I'd watch Apocalypse Now before I'd watch Full Metal Jacket.
I would agree. I think so.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
But
if given the choice, I'd watch Come and See before I watch anything.
Well, that's fair enough too. But then again,
but I 2001 for me, but probably Barry Lyndon a close second.
Barry Lyndon, the movie up there.
I haven't seen Barry Lyndon in a long, long time.
I've seen
it in
cinema because it is on 70mm NFI. It was astonishing. I mean, astonishing.
Just to point out, amongst that lineup at the Lighthouse, they're showing Lolita as part of their cinema book club.
That's true. Yeah.
And funnily enough, I've actually started reading Lolita before they announced that. So that's a nice piece of serendipity.
Don't do it on the bus.
Yeah, I know.
Don't dribble and look at people either. You don't like it, apparently.
But I do that anyway. Halloween.
The book and
stop it. And Friday, October 31st, yes, they're showing The Shining.
Yeah.
You should dress up as Grady.
Halloween. No, dress up as the twins. Both of them.
No, I could be Grady.
You could be Grady.
Yes. My daughters, they didn't take to the outlook at first, but I corrected them. I'm gonna be there. Maybe.
I can. I actually feel like watching a show, Kubrick film tonight. But I want to see some more. I want to see the picture, even though I've seen the chocolate. But I think I gotta see more.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm
gonna
see?
In the gap, so.
Yeah,
do you know what I
want to
watch right now? Do you know what I want to watch? I want to watch The Shining. Shh! I'm gonna get sued. We're big Simpsons nuts here. Or at least when they were good.
Yeah, back in the day.
Back in the day.
Simpsons nuts are just nuts in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
And on that.
Don't be interrupting Willie between 4 and 5. That's Willie's time.
Staying in my Unibomber style shack.
Oh, God. Right.
Erase your family. I'll give you a beer.
We're going to leave it there, so.
What a glorious end.
Isn't it marvellous? Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye. Come again.
That is literally the dumbest thing I've ever heard.